Welcome to the NFID podcast, Infectious Ideas. This is Marla Dalton, NFID Executive Director and CEO, and with me is my co-host, Dr. Bill Schaffner. Bill, it's always great to have you.
Good to be with you, Marla.
Our guest today is Dr. Grace Lee, a dynamic leader who helped guide U.S. vaccine policymaking during the turbulent times of the COVID-19 pandemic. With an inclusive, patient, yet decisive tone and graceful demeanor. In recognition of her leadership, NFID will honor her with the 2024 John P. Utz Leadership Award at the 2024 NFID Awards Gala. An infectious disease physician, Lee is Chief Quality Officer at Stanford Medicine Children's Health and Professor of Pediatrics at Stanford University School of Medicine. A nationally known vaccine expert, she is also a member of the National Academy of Medicine and continues to manage and treat young patients with infectious diseases. Grace, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Marla. I really appreciate being on.
So you have had an interesting career and recently played a significant role in shaping U.S. vaccine policy around COVID-19. So when did you decide to choose a career in medicine and who were some of your earlier influencers?
First, before I get started, I do want to thank you and the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases for this incredible honor and this recognition. I honestly had never imagined this is how my career would evolve. So I feel very fortunate to have had many mentors along the way in my career who opened up opportunities that led me to this place and time. So in talking about the early influencers, of course, I'm going to have to start with one of the first doctors I met, which was my father, who was a pediatrician from another era. He was a solo practitioner, an old school pediatrician, was on call 24/7 for his patients. And he ended up caring for over three generations of family members over four decades in his career. And he and my mom actually were very service oriented in their lives. And that really made a lasting impression on me. And then I was really fortunate to have different mentors along the way who sparked my interest in pediatric ID and health services research as a med student and as a pediatric resident. And then I was lucky in that I had mentors who introduced me to cost-effectiveness analysis related to vaccines and vaccine safety. Some of my mentors were Tracy Liu and Rich Platt early on in my career. That really, while they were not in pediatric ID, I think they opened my eyes to opportunities and being able to learn and think differently as a faculty member. And so I'm very grateful to them because I think they helped me on my journey. And I have been very lucky to have had very kind and generous mentors throughout.
So Grace, during your 7 years of service on the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, the ACIP, you chaired more than 20 special meetings in addition to the routine meetings on COVID-19, and you oversaw discussions and key votes ranging from Mpox to respiratory syncytial virus, RSV. So what do you think, as you look back, were your greatest challenges in that role, and what were your greatest successes?
A couple things. One is, I believe I might hold the record for chairing the most meetings. I'm not sure about that. And I hope that nobody has to break that record and that we don't have another pandemic coming along soon. But it was a very different time period to be chairing the committee for sure. In terms of the greatest challenges in the role, I think it was really learning to lead our committee through the many uncertainties and doing so in a very public manner. Early on, I was pretty focused on, even before I became chair, establishing our COVID-19 Vaccine Safety Technical Work Group, which we called VAST for short. And that was unusual because this work group had a role that was different and distinct from the COVID-19 Vaccine Work Group, which typically is the work group that takes into consideration all of the aspects around decision-making, including benefits and risks and the benefit-risk balance. While that work group certainly retained the leadership in ensuring that we brought to the committee the full picture of benefit-risk balance, VAST was in essence different in that it was an interagency collaboration that included members from a wide range of safety systems that were supported by CDC, FDA, CMS, the Department of Defense, the VA, and the Indian Health Services, as well as we were very fortunate that we had international partners and colleagues during that time be able to share their expertise and their experiences with this particular work group so that we could understand the entirety and the totality of the vaccine safety landscape, both in the US and globally. So that was not typical. And I think reflecting on that, it was actually a success in my view, because we were able to review safety data in real time. It allowed us to be equipped to respond to signals in a proactive manner. And that, I believe, helped enable us to be able to better support real-time decision-making and in public view about the use of those vaccines and to ensure transparency about the benefit-risk balance. And as data were emerging on a daily and weekly basis, and so we were constantly trying to understand whether or not there were any dynamic changes to that benefit-risk balance as time went on.
Just let me say quickly, I think that is an extraordinary success. And I wish this intense oversight of vaccine safety were better known, not only by the profession, but by the general public. And my hat's off to you for having created that and made sure that the safety aspects received as much attention as did the effectiveness aspects of the new COVID vaccines.
Thank you. It was definitely a team effort. And I think we learned very much from the H1N1 experience when there was something similar that was assembled by the National Vaccine Program Office in 2009, 2010. So we certainly had a strong example in front of us. And I think that we wanted to make sure that we were bringing that information in real time to the committee.
I think it's safe to say that there was not much that was typical of the experience, Grace. But I think what so many of us would love to know is how you managed to maintain such a calm demeanor through all those policy discussions. And also, as you look back, what you think are the key important learnings from the COVID-19 pandemic experience?
It was interesting. As an ACIP member, I felt my job was to contribute my expertise to the deliberations. But as I became chair of the ACIP, I realized my role was different. The way I saw my job was that it was my responsibility to create a safe and respectful place and space for the committee members to have robust discussions on topics that were both challenging and where we knew there was great uncertainty. And I felt pretty strongly that our discussions should be inclusive of a wide range of opinions, especially before a vote happened. We understood clearly throughout the pandemic that it was likely that someone would be unhappy with our committee recommendations or disagree with the committee recommendations somewhere along the way. So the outcome might not be what they wanted. Because we knew that people would have different feelings and perspectives about the recommendation itself, it became even more important for us to have a transparent process that highlighted the different values and the perspectives that our members brought to the discussion and our liaison members brought to the discussion. And because of that, I think I was calm because it was my preference that we have the discussions in public view during the meeting rather than after the meeting when a decision had already been made.
Grace, given the advances that you've seen in vaccines and vaccine policy, and at the same time, I'm sure you've appreciated the increase that we've experienced in vaccine hesitancy, are you optimistic for the future?
In my role now, I see every challenge as an opportunity, Bill. It's an opportunity for us to learn, you know, an opportunity for us to remember our past and an opportunity to improve. With that mindset of what we can do, I think that the past 4 years for me has highlighted several key areas of opportunity. First is the importance of the science of implementation, equity, and communication. Those are three areas that the committee had to learn as we go, how to continue to incorporate that in a very meaningful way in our discussions. And we know that there is deep expertise in each of those fields. And being able to continue to bring that kind of expertise to the committee, I think, will be important in the coming years. The second is the need for consistency in our recommendations across key populations. And the places where I would lean in are really certain populations like those who are pregnant. And I will say, actually, even for children, which sounds funny, because we often think that the immunization schedule is about children when we know it's about children and adults. But the COVID-19 pandemic, we certainly saw challenges as we rolled out COVID vaccines for younger and younger populations. And then finally, I'll just say that the third aspect is the need for broadening our platforms to make it easier to implement. So prevention of respiratory diseases in older adults as a platform rather than disease-specific recommendations. I think as we look towards implementation, making it easier for people to do the right thing, that continues to be an area of opportunity for us. And then finally, I'll just say that as we continue to broaden the types of expertise we include on ACIP, we'll also need to build the pipelines of expertise that are going to be needed for the future.
Well, I'm going to shift gears a little bit now and ask, Grace, what is something that people would be surprised to learn about you? And what do you like to do for fun and to relieve stress?
I think most people assume, and you can tell me if you assume this too, that I'm an extrovert because I tend to laugh a lot. But growing up, I was extremely shy and I actually preferred to hide in the background whenever possible. And it's still my instinct. So I think I lean towards being an introvert even today. That's one thing that I think people are often surprised by. The second thing, just in terms of relieving stress, I joked that when I retire, I'm going to take up a hobby. And one of the hobbies that I hope to take up is relearning the piano, because I actually did enjoy that for a long period of time. But I started to learn to rely on small everyday things to keep me grounded. So just moments of connection, particularly with my family and with close friends. And I think as I get older and hopefully a little bit wiser, I'm realizing that making those moments more frequent and sustained is one of my personal goals.
We'll look forward to receiving an invitation to your first recital.
I'm looking forward to hearing you play chopsticks.
Exactly. Thanks. That I might be able to pull off.
Going from the sublime to the more concerning, what keeps you awake at night these days?
Vaccine hesitancy is certainly on the list. Mm. But actually, what really keeps me up at night is that as a consequence of the pandemic, I think we're also seeing more vaccine hesitancy among our provider community. And I think there's no way for us to reach our patients and communities who would benefit from vaccination if our provider community also has doubts. I've started to recognize that science and data are not enough. We also need to become the trusted voices in many different and non-traditional channels of communication. Bill, you're excellent at this, and you actually have the voice of trust in many arenas. We need to continue to build out that expertise. It's something we're not naturally trained to do, and I don't think we're actually incentivized as clinicians to do this at a broad scale. Developing that local, regional, and national strategy to rebuild and strengthen that trust, the trusted voice, I feel like we're going to continue to see an erosion of the public health gains that we've had over the many decades unless we can really tackle that differently.
So, Grace, before we sign off, I'd like to give you the same opportunity that we give to all of our guests, and that is, what is the myth that you would most like to bust?
The one that I feel like I still am trying to bust is that the flu vaccine causes the flu.
Yeah.
That one lives on. I don't know how. I think even more broadly, just that the myth that vaccine-preventable diseases are no longer a problem in the U.S., as we're starting to see more cases of measles in the first quarter of 2024 than we saw in all of 2023. As we continue to see the resurgence of these infections, in part due to pockets of lower rates of immunization in different communities, I think that we're going to need to really think about how we, again, go back to that communication piece, and we are supporting and reinforcing the importance of these amazing interventions that vaccines have given us such opportunity to lead healthier lives. And yet, I feel like we're in a position where people either have a hard time believing it or perhaps we take it for granted. So I think we still have a lot of work to do.
It's a team effort. We're all doing this together, whether locally or nationally. We've all got to keep working on that. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Grace Lee, a pediatrician, authority on vaccines. Thanks again for joining us, Grace, and thanks to everyone for listening to this episode of Infectious Ideas, a podcast series presented by the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, where leading experts join us for thought-provoking conversations that lead to infectious ideas. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And if you'd like more information about NFID, be sure to visit us online at nfid.org. Until next time.